Hello, this is Hugh Beard, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa at any time this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad, and I'd like to welcome Senator Jay Costa.
Thank you, Hugh, and I want to thank all of our listeners on this telephone town hall. I appreciate the opportunity to communicate with the constituents in our district, and particularly at a timely way when we are discussing a lot of pretty important issues up here in Harrisburg. I think you, as some of our listeners probably know, the Senate acted on a couple of major pieces of legislation last couple of weeks, putting together what I believe a pretty historic budget with regard to investments in education, as well as looking to reinvest and putting resources back into our human service lines, things like drug and alcohol funding, things like mental health programs, mental illness programs, and a whole host of other programs that really provide services to our constituents. In addition to that, economic development resources are made available. You know, for the past 4 years, Pennsylvania has been going on a decline, Hugh, from 7th in the country to 48th in the country in job growth. And quite frankly, we are now beginning to make investments to reverse that trend and move us back up towards the top. The action we took yesterday and again today in appropriations made it clear that we have a strong budget that allow us to do the things we need to do. With respect to education, we're going to begin to replace that $1 billion that was cut, the cumulative over $3 billion reduction over the past 4 years, and with the $350 million increase in basic education. But beyond that, we make what I think are probably the best investments that we can make relate to investments in our early learning programs, our pre-K programs, where we add another $50 million on top of $97 million. That is a significant increase of 50%, and something that I believe that's probably our best dollars we'll spend in that budget. And beyond that, additional resources, another $50 million for special education in the Commonwealth, as well as $10 million for Head Start. So education fared very well, but we got a lot of work to do to catch up, and that's pretty significant. The second thing that we did that passed the Senate with strong bipartisan support, as did the budget, was some pension reforms, reforming the pensions that we have in the Commonwealth for new employees going forward, something that we tried to address as we went forward in this conversation. And I think it was a fair budget and a fair pension reform proposal that helps us address the crisis, at the same time retaining a fairly decent level of retirement security for those individuals who will come to work in the Commonwealth in the future and be able to allow them to retire with a level of retirement security, which combined with the Social Security would give them about 90% of the replacement income. So we think those are some of the things that we need to look at, and we're going to continue to work, but we have some other work to do here in Harrisburg.
Thanks to those who have just joined us. If you have a question for Senator Costa this evening, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad, Senator, as we have some folks joining us. Can you explain exactly where the budget is? We passed the bipartisan budget earlier this week on a strong vote. The bill went over to the House, and then there was some action today in the House. Can you explain to those folks who joined us where we're at?
Sure, a couple things. Over the course of the past month, we've had in place a framework agreement among the five parties. The five parties being the Senate Democrats, whom I represent, Senate Republicans, House Democrats, House Republicans, and the governor. And we've been proceeding along the path where, for the past several weeks, we've been working together to draft various bills. The four main tenets of that agreement are education funding, but the budget broadly, the spend number and the like, and other program dollars we talked about, but with a focus on education. Also pension reform, also working to address our structural deficit, and the last piece of that conversation related to wine and spirits modernization or some level of privatization. And we've been proceeding along that path where all four parties were participating. Unfortunately, in the last couple of days, our House Republican colleagues have walked away from that deal, reneging on that deal, and now it's the four of the five groups working together to try to bring closure to this budget. So we put together a budget bill that I mentioned, as well as a pension reform, that passed the Senate, is now over the House, waiting for the House's action. Again, as I said, that represents four of the five parties getting together and working through that. And the House is now changing their position and reneging on our deal and walking away from it. And now they are trying to, House Republicans that is, and now trying to sort of cast their own deal with a couple things that I think are problematic for us going forward. And a much different education spend, nowhere near the investments in human service programs, no focus whatsoever on trying to grow jobs in this in Pennsylvania. So it's a budget bill that, quite frankly, we don't agree with. We took steps late this evening or early this evening to make changes to that budget. So when the House budget came over to the Senate, we put it into our Appropriations Committee and amended out their language and put our language back in. And probably over the weekend or maybe Monday, we have to give it 3 days, legislative days on the calendar. We will probably send that bill back to the House again, reflecting what we believe to be consistent with the framework of the agreement between the governor and with the other three other caucuses, including, and ours makes four. The goal is to get a budget done. The only way you get a budget done is by you get a governor's signature on it. And the document that we put out of the Senate here is the document that the governor will sign. What the House Republicans did today, Hugh, governor said he's not going to sign.
Right.
It's as simple as that. So that's what we're working towards. My hope is that we have it by mid-next week at the latest, have a budget in place.
Thanks, Senator. And again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, we're going to press *3 on your phone's keypad. We're going to go to Frank in Wilkins Township. Frank, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Just a question. I've read there's going to be about $350 million added to the education funding. What is that going to cover? I mean, is there some room for negotiation there where they can possibly give a little bit and gain a little bit for the representatives that will go along with it?
Well, I think that $350 is driven out under a formula to the school districts. The school districts, what they received previously, will be basically held harmless. They would receive the same amount they basically received last year. The $350 then will be driven out under about half of it under a new basic education formula that I served on the commission to establish a new basic education funding formula. That's how the other half of that $350 will be driven out that way. And the other half will be driven out through the old formula as well. So, and then next year, we will then put into place all new resources towards education will be going out under the new funding formula to begin. What we tried to do initially this year, as much as we could, was restore the base, restore the loss of the base funding that we had under the Corbett years to replace those dollars and then build upon that with the new formula. And that's what we did. But it goes into the classroom, and that's what we think is important, to make certain that we're able to provide our kids across this Commonwealth the tools that they need with respect to instructors and the things that they need to become educated and to create the appropriate environment, create the situation where we are also making sure that, you know, they're in a position to learn, and particularly those investments in programs that are important. Now, that being said, we are cognizant that school districts are getting more money, and we have to make certain that they're not going to run out and take that money and then begin to raise some property taxes up to the limit or things along those lines. So they've been cautioned in this process. The governor was very clear when he said that if we give you new money, then we are going to need you to tell us how you're going to use this money, and we're going to hold you accountable to be able to use it in the ways we think you should use it. My guess is some of those dollars will go into a variety of different areas, including things like early learning programs. They'll be going into things like teacher training. They'll be going into things like maybe some of the ideas related to smaller class sizes. Those are the type of things that I think you'll see some of those resources used for.
Thank you very much for the call. Remember, if you have a question for Senator Costa this evening, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Christian. Christian, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous that there is no budget in Harrisburg at this point. What would you say, Senator, if I said that I will not vote for you or anybody else in office currently in Harrisburg because of your collective inability to get a budget passed?
Well, I appreciate your call, and I share your frustration. We have tried very hard to get a budget passed. What we did not want to do was to continue down a path where we would put a budget in place that was harmful to folks in Pennsylvania and left us with a financially unstable or instable fiscal situation. So I hope that you would recognize those things when you do go cast your vote.
Thank you, Christian, for the call. Again, if you have a call for a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Robert. Mm-hmm. Robert, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. First of all, thank you for all that you do. I have
thank
two
you,
questions.
Robert. Sure.
The first question I have is related to the new calculations as far as the funding to the school districts. Will there be any more emphasis put on the poorer school districts getting a little bit more to help offset some of the higher tax rate increases that we see to help offset the costs? And then
yes.
two, This is a little bit long of a question, but the way that the formula is now to fund charter schools for special education, it looks at the current school district's expenses for special education times the average, I think it's the state average, like 16% it was in 2014. But my school district's percentage of special education school students is 20%. So if you actually divide it by those number of students to get the average student cost for special education, we might have paid out over $280,000 more than what we should have based upon how the formula works. Is there any way that that could be overhauled?
Well, we thank you, Robert. They're both very good questions. The first question, I think, you related to some of the factors that go into the numbers that go into the formula. We certainly consider the ability to pay, and there's a number of other things. We just went through an extensive basic education funding formula that had a variety of considerations, a variety of factors that we need to look at now as we go forward. And we'll fully implement that next year, but for this budget season, what we're doing is looking at half of that 350 and driving it out that way that does, in fact, include that variable. With respect to charter school funding, whether it be cyber school or whether it be the brick-and-mortar charter school, and more specifically the special education part of that in terms of how we arrive at what the school districts have to pay charter schools, that whole conversation continues to take place. We are looking to do what I believe is significant charter reform, again, particularly with respect to our charter, our cyber charters, but as it relates to holding accountability measures on with respect to special education funding, we are continuing to work through that. We did do a special education funding commission a couple of years ago. That formula is incorporated. We move sort of more towards tiers and different levels, and I think that will be fully implemented as we go forward. But please know that the school funding formula is a very complicated formula that we're trying to get our arms around. I learned a great deal about it and starting on that commission for a period of months, and I think at the end of the day, though, we need to continue to work down that line. But our priority with respect to charter school funding formulas, certainly look at the cyber piece first, because I think that's where we can achieve significant number of savings. And then secondly, looking at areas to make it more fair and equitable for those school districts that have higher than normal or higher than anticipated special education costs.
Robert, thank you very much for the question. Senator, we're going to go to Doug. Doug, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator, I am as aware as well as you are that in the United States House of Representatives, the majority of representatives from Pennsylvania are Republican and the minority are Democratic. I think it's something like 14 to 5, if I have that correct.
I'm sorry, numbers. We have, in terms of Congress, there's 435 members, you said? Yes.
Yeah, but I'm saying in terms of Pennsylvania's representation in Congress, how many do we have total?
13 to 5.
We have 18 total positions in Congress, in the General Assembly in Congress, and we have 2 U.S. senators for a total of 20.
We have
13 Republicans and 5 Democrats.
Okay, so it's close on there, 13 Republicans, 5 Democrats. And
right.
My understanding is that in Pennsylvania, we have a Democratic registration edge over Republicans of, can you repeat the number? You probably know it better than I do.
It's well over a million voters. A registration is well over a million.
Okay, so we have well over a million Democratic registered voters?
Yes. More Democrats than Republicans, yes.
And about what number Republicans?
Oh, I think I can't give you the specific numbers. I just know that the Democratic advantage is about a million voters. There are
a million more registered Democrats
than Republicans.
So we have a million more registered Democrats, and yet we have a minority in the United States in the United States Congress, in the House of Representatives. Now, my understanding is that this has resulted largely from successful gerrymandering.
You're 100% correct.
Okay. So the question is, as we move forward, what could Senate, the Democratic representatives in our Commonwealth, in the Senate or in the House, do, as well as we know what citizens have to do. Citizens have to vote. To correct this gerrymandering difficulty. In other words, it seems to me absurd that Representative Tim Murphy of Upper St. Clair has a district that starts somewhere in western Pennsylvania and ends somewhere in the northeastern part of the state with nothing in between. A district solely gerrymandered, apparently, to assure his continued electability. Go ahead. So the question is, what is it that, if anything, that representatives in the Pennsylvania House and Senate, who are Democrats, can do to address this gerrymandering problem?
Well, first, thank you for the question, Doug. The first thing is for voters to know, or excuse me, listeners to know, that the way that we do the congressional lines is through legislation. It's no different than any other piece of legislation that is enacted. So a piece of legislation is enacted which draws the lines and is voted on through the process. Senate Democrats vehemently opposed the redrawing of the lines for the federal lines through this legislation. And we will continue to oppose them when they're done in this manner. You're 100% correct. Republican majority in the House and the Senate, along with Governor Corbett at the time, drafted lines that are totally unacceptable, and they did the gerrymandering to allow themselves to have the advantage that we talked about and really make it into perpetuity, at least until the new redistricting lines come in 2022. What can we do? We can continue to work to make certain that we hold our colleagues to the fire in terms of what they want to do, but in this instance, large majorities that they have both in the House and the Senate allow them to be able to do whatever the heck they want to do in many instances, and we can't prevent that. All we can do is sort of raise our voices and say this is wrong. The new thing that we have in place, and hopefully from my view we continue, would be in 2022 when we'd have a Democratic governor. Again, we had a Republican House, Republican Senate, and Republican governor. They didn't need much input from legislative Democrats. As we go forward, knowing that we have a Democratic governor, hopefully in 2022, then Governor Wolf would be in the position to be able to say, unless you have all parties sitting at the table negotiating a fair and proper redistricting map, I'm going to veto it. And that's the difference. So now what our Democrats can do is to make sure we get Tom Wolf reelected in a couple of years so that he's sitting at a table with us saying that this map doesn't fly, I'm going to veto this map, or if you give me a map like you just gave Tom Corbett sign, I will veto it, and you'll go back to the table, and we're going to do this until we get it right, until it's fair to everyone in Pennsylvania. Those are the things we'll be able to do.
Doug, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad, and we'll get you online as quickly as possible. We're going to go to we also have calls, questions that are submitted online, Senator, and this one is from Sarah, and the question is, thank you for your recent legislation to protect highway workers. As a first responder, I appreciate your focus on this issue. Why is this issue important to you?
Well, certainly working and protecting our workers is an important issue, and I was pleased to be able to work with my colleague from Washington County, Senator Bartolotta, and also working with the Turnpike folks. Chairman Sean Logan was a big part of it, as well as Secretary of Transportation. I'm drawing a blank on her name now. She's a new person. But in any event, Leslie Miller. Together we worked the process, and we're successful in getting that legislation done. And, you know, it's geared towards safety, not only for our workers, but for other folks who are driving, to make certain that we really change the culture of driving, particularly in work zones, so people become more cognizant of what can be done and the harms that could apply if we injure somebody. So that was the primary reason, and I had great support along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Senator, we're going to go back to the online question that we received, and the question is from Ann, and the question is, human service programs were decimated during the last administration. Can we fix that and provide hope to families in need?
Yeah, that's a great question, Hugh. We will be fixing the human services lines. We're not going to do all of them. We're not going to be able to restore everything, but we're looking to restore about $300 million additional dollars into human service programs. Now, there are a variety of programs that we're talking about under human services, but the ones that always stick out that I think folks across our district and across the Commonwealth look at, you know, human service type programs that I say broadly, services that are provided in the community by providers, that help folks, whether they be wraparound services to folks, whether they be drug and alcohol programs, mental health programs, mental illness programs, whole host of other programs that are important to folks. Beyond that, we have other types of programs that fall under the Department of Human Services that help provide medical benefits to a lot of folks as well. And there's increases along those lines as well. At the end of the day, all the lines is about 50 lines in human services, about $300 million, new dollars. So it's allowing us to begin to address what we need to do in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Senator, thank you very much. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, there's one more online question we received, and it's from Tim. I understand we have to reauthorize the CHIP program. Will that happen in time?
Yeah, that's going to happen. We actually dealt with an amendment, or we're going to deal with an amendment today, and we're likely to be able to reauthorize the CHIP program. We're going to pass the Senate. It's going to go back to the House in a couple of days, but we've got a timeline. We've got to get it done, and we will get it done in the next week or so.
Tim, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Jean. Jean, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator. I was wondering, I assume that the Senate and the House members are all being paid while you are not making a budget. So my question is, have you included anything in the new budget to help the school districts that have had to take on extra expenses since they did not have the state funding?
Yeah, well, let me first address your first question. Not all folks are being paid. I've not been paid since July 1st, and I refuse to accept the paycheck until our budget is done. I think my colleague Jim Brewster from McKeesport did the same thing, as well as some other folks around the region. So we're not being paid. Some members chose to be paid. Others did not. I chose not to be paid until we're resolved. Our staff folks are being paid. What are we doing with respect to the interest payments, not only for our schools, but our human service programs? Just today, we added $10 million to the budget that we're going to send over back to the House this week, $10 million to help those entities that made interest payments because of our inability to get our job done to pay those interest payments.
Gene, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Isaac. Mm-hmm. Isaac, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Hi. I just want to know what you do for Linton Middle School, because the chairs there are broken, the school has no funding, and I fear for my education. What do you want to do?
Isaac, thank you very much. You know, my brothers and I also went to Linton Elementary as well. What I'm going to do first thing tomorrow morning is put a call into Dr. Linda Lane's office and the folks at the school district and find out why you have broken chairs and see what we can do along those lines to address that. More importantly, what we're going to be doing is, you know, working with the city of Pittsburgh. I know that our budget is going to provide for a significant increase in funding for Pittsburgh as well as other school districts, but Pittsburgh is going to receive probably an increase of about $10 million this year, and I think it'll go a long way to trying to address some of the issues that have been developing in the school district to help them meet some of the needs and the challenges that they face with respect to educating our kids.
Isaac, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Marcia in Wilkinsburg. Marcia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. Again, my name is Marcia, and I'm calling because I am a retired teacher who has the care of a family member. It's a child, age 14, who has cerebral palsy. I have tried many, many, many different ways to get a ramp built on my home. I live on the high side of the street. Right now, that's considered a home modification and not a medical necessity. So getting my family member in and out of the house each day is a very arduous chore. I was wondering if there's anything I'm overlooking. I'm usually above income guidelines for one thing and or another. Is there something that can be done for constituents who have family members who face physical challenges and need assistance in the state of Pennsylvania?
Let me, I don't know to what degree you've looked into alternatives that may be there. It sounds like you've gone through Human Service Agency or the State Human Service Department or Health Department to try to get some assistance. Let me look and see whether or not there, and I'll reach back to you. Maybe we got your phone number. We'll follow up with you and to see whether or not we can look to some of the either social service agencies that may be helpful or the foundation community that may be helpful, and see what we can come up with. But there aren't a whole lot of places other than the lines and the programs that I'm sure you've already tried, you looked at, and you've exhausted. But I will do this. I will look into it and try to give you a call back and see what we can come up with and give you more clarity along those lines.
Marcia, thank you very much. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to George in Regent Square. George, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Senator. My name is George, and I have a multi-part question here, and it's concerned with the so-called retirement modifications that are included in this budget. First off, the problem, and you could respond to this, but the problem that existed in the pension system, the so-called deficit that's in there and the underfunding that's in there now, large part of that was because of the downturn in the market. But even prior to that, when the market was doing well, the state and local neglected to make any payments to the pension system. When times were good and it was funded at a high rate, maybe even over the top of 100% funded, the state and local made no contribution payments to it when they should have been doing that. Now when the pension system has some issues with it, they're seeing a big bill coming in, and now they're looking for some way to do that on the backs of pensioners and on the new people coming into the system. Okay, and that's I want to know why those payments weren't made. The second part is I heard you mention, and this idea of including Social Security payments as part of a person's retirement package, that's a bit of a red herring. And I think that should not be put in. I mean, people have paid into both systems, into Social Security and into the pension. Now, there are states that don't have Social Security for their teachers and administrators, such as Connecticut and Ohio, that opted out of the Social Security system, and those people have to rely only on the pension system that's in place. Third, don't you see the problem, or I hope that someone sees the problem in the future that you're going to experience in terms of attracting the kind of quality people that you need in the classroom? The salaries in terms of being competitive, they're somewhat competitive, but one of the nice things about and things that are saleable to youngsters coming out of college or even experienced people is our pension system, which has been among the best in the country. And now this is going to take it down to being one of the worst in the country. Third, if the pension system or the reforms that the legislature is proposing are so wonderful and that this is just a great system, why is the legislature not getting involved in the same system? That from my understanding, they're going to continue, they're in the same PSCRS system that we're all in. Why aren't the legislatures adopting that for themselves? These are my questions.
Okay. Thanks, George. Let me first start with the first question dealing with how we got here. And you're exactly right. Pennsylvania was wrong. The General Assembly was incorrect, and our previous governors, Democrat and Republican, dating back well before Ridge, were wrong not to make the payments that you referenced. And at the same time, we were not making payments. We were telling the school districts, you don't need to make your payments. And over the course of the past 16 or 17 years, we've not been doing that to the degree that we should have. We used that money in different places. So instead of making payments into the pension system, we decided to put money in other places. And it was wrong. And then certainly the two economic downturns did not help our case either. 2010, we made some significant changes to our pension system for both members and for all state employees, as well as folks under the state teachers' pension fund. And it has changed a bit there as well. We are faced with many challenges here in Pennsylvania, and one of the things is the unfunded liability that we have with respect to our pension system, well over $45 billion. And I would say to you that while we have a pension system that's very lucrative, what will be going forward only for new employees, and I think it's clear that we recognize this, only new employees, and including new legislators, any new legislator coming into office, I'm not quite sure the date, in the future, any new legislator coming in would be subject to the new plan. They would not be under the existing plan. So there is a distinction between legislators, new legislators, just as new employees would be under the new plan. That's important to recognize. But all current employees in the Commonwealth and the school district and in the Commonwealth agencies would continue to receive the benefits that they receive at this point in time. And there'll be no change along those lines. With respect to, do I think this is a good plan? No, I would not. This is not what I would have done. What we tried to do was less changes, but to the pension system going forward for new employees. Our colleagues in the Republican side of the table insisted on a defined contribution plan. And let's be clear, right now, what current employees get who were hired after 2011 under Act 120 have a 2% multiplier. They contribute 6.25%, or I'm sorry, they contribute 7.5% as a teacher, 6.25% as a state worker. What we're doing is splitting that. Instead of 2% multiplier, the multiplier or the defined benefit plan goes from being 2% to 1%. So there's a 50% reduction only in the defined benefit side of the equation. But what we do introduce under this plan is the defined contribution side. And one thing we did hear loud and clear from a lot of folks around the Commonwealth is that most other people have a defined contribution plan that they have to deal with. And that the question and why is it that the state's reluctant to apply defined contribution plan to our all of our state employees. We fought that battle for 4 years now. And it got to a point where we were now in a position where we have a structural framework and we have a structural deficit with respect to our funding, that this was one of the must-haves by the Republican caucuses to help get us home and get the revenue we need to move forward. So, listen, it's not a great plan going forward. It's one that I walked into. I'll have the opportunity whenever, I think the date certain is January 1 of 18, I will opt in from my current plan into the new plan, which would reduce my benefit package, retirement package, significantly, because that's what I think we should do. But I would say to you, it's not a plan that I would, if I was writing the plan myself and we had Democratic votes, it would look differently. But at the end of the day, this is about compromising on these major issues, education funding, revenue, pensions, and wine and spirits. And in the spirit of being able to do that, that's what was done. This will save us about $6 billion in cost. It reduces our unfunded liability by about $6 billion going forward. But I think what's important is that it gives us a split. New employees going forward would have half of a defined benefit plan that they have today, but they'd have a new defined contribution plan where they would make, depending upon whether it was the state system or the state system of teachers, but there would be a 2.5% match. And the value, as I indicated, was about 90% when you include Social Security. If you take Social Security out, it's probably a 60 or 65% replacement value, or probably closer to 60% replacement value on the pension for individuals. And a lot of other states are going to this hybrid system, this what's called the side-by-side hybrid. That's what the federal government has had for federal employees for decades. So I think it was an opportunity for us to move forward in a comprehensive budget approach between pensions, wine and spirits, education funding and general fund budget, structural deficit, and the modernization of wine and spirits. That's how we got here.
And again, this is a plan, Senator, that more than 20 other states in the federal government already operate. And just to clarify, because I know this is an issue that has been raised not only on this call but others, the opting out of legislators. Legislators will be included in this proposal.
All new legislators effective January 1 of 18 go into the new system. So their benefit package, the health, the pension benefit changes, and people before 2011 go from a 3% multiplier down to a 1% multiplier. So there are major changes along those lines. But that's automatic. But whereas employees who work for the state going forward, they stay in the old system. So that's a distinguishing factor between new members who are reelected and elected after that date.
George, thanks again for your question, Senator. We're going to go to Denise. Denise in Wilkinsburg. Denise, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you, Senator Costa, for taking the call and having this town hall meeting. Two questions. Hey, how you doing? One question is, does the budget recognize or include a line item for technical education beyond the 12th grade, beyond high school? And I'm thinking specifically of machinists and other technical jobs for returning Pennsylvania to the haven for high-skilled workers, and secondly has to do with raising not just the minimum wage, but making Pennsylvania a more union-friendly environment so that folks at UPMC and other large institutions are able to bargain for a better life. Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome, Lisa, and thank you for all you do in Wilkinsburg. Appreciate it very much. I would say to you, we're still trying to find, we are adding more resources, probably about $5 million, I think, to programs with folks with disabilities, both in school and out of school.
Right.
And I think beyond that, which I think is an important step for us to continue to take. And again, those go to the type of services, even though those are resources that I think are extremely important. With regard to work, making sure that we are going to continue to grow wages, we're going to fight for the minimum wage as much as we can. We're going to push for 10-10. It probably will not be part of this budget conversation, but I can tell you that I know that there's efforts in the city of Pittsburgh to go to $15 that Mayor Peduto is looking at. And I know Governor Wolf is contemplating, if he already hasn't, taking some steps to allow us to go to 10-10 for, through an executive order where the state has contracts with some individuals. So I have to check on whether that's been fully implemented. But we're going to have to work to do that because when we raise those wages and we support folks that do a lot of the work that needs to be done along those lines, that's important. Now, we fund, as I said, the human service programs, and we provide increases to some of those providers, whether they be, you know, the UPMCs or the like. It's hard for us to determine or dictate to them that they have to pass those wages on, those increased dollars we give them, pass them on for wages to those individuals. And that's something we've talked about over the years here for a lot of years. But we've done it in the past where we said when we give the money to the counties, the county then contracts with the providers. We say that the counties have to pass that on to the providers, and providers give it to the workers. We've not had a whole lot of success along those lines, and we've got to revisit that.
Denise, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Jim in Squirrel Hill. Jim, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Jim in Squirrel Hill. First, I'd like to congratulate you on having the guts and the knowledge to pull off a successful unscripted question and answer thing. It's really very impressive. My question centers on job creation. And if I recall correctly, Eugene DePasquale did an audit of PCED, or at least a partial audit, last year, and Randy Albright, in his last prior incarnation, had a set of legislation, economic development legislation. I think they're mostly capital development projects, called Pennsylvania Works. And I was wondering if those two, how those two reports affected the budget, if at all, and if they did, you know, what we're going to do about goosing Pennsylvania's job creation numbers up so we can be in the top, you know, if one of the more job-producing states instead of one of the least job-producing states.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I appreciate the very kind comments, and I hope you're doing well, my friend. You're right. We've had, you know, Senate Democrats where Secretary Albright was our executive director, now budget secretary, has highlighted a number of the things that we've talked about. Some of these things have been incorporated, what we've talked about through that comprehensive Pennsylvania Works plan. Some of these items have already been incorporated into the budget that we're working on, that we've passed. So a number of those things are there as part of that. Going forward, the more infrastructure-related stuff, Jim, I think will likely come forward through the, like, for example, the investment bank that we talked about, or the infrastructure bank that we talked about, those type of things are still being considered. Our focus right now is getting through this budget season. And beyond that, we'll begin to look at those bricks and mortar investments in our region throughout the Commonwealth through the RCAP program, which I think is very, very important. So those things will all take place as we go forward. But many of the things that Randy's spoken to you about, I know, and spoken to us about, or Secretary Albright, will be included in this budget, as well as we go forward, you'll see other things. And quite frankly, come February, when the governor does his next budget address, 5 or 6 weeks from now, 7 weeks from now, it's hard to believe, but that'll be the case, that we fully expect that those type of things will be part of that conversation as well.
Jim, thanks for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to Penn Hills for Barbara. Barbara, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. I thank you for speaking with me. My question is anything being done where senior citizens on a Social Security income, and of course no raises in our income, but the taxes, is there anything for being even talked about for property taxes for senior citizens that have paid all these years into Penn Hills, because we've lived here 50-some years, and it's just getting harder and harder to understand. We're not seeing anything being done or seeing any improvements to try to keep the township going. And I didn't know if you had any, you could answer me on that.
Yeah, well, we have, as you know, we have in place several programs. We already have in place a property tax and rent rebate program for seniors. And we also have every homeowner in Pennsylvania for their primary residence gets a refund from the Commonwealth because of the gaming fund. That goes to your taxes. Beyond that, we're trying to do more. We had a very interesting discussion about a month or so ago trying to significantly reduce property taxes for folks, all folks, primarily seniors as well as individuals, homeowners. But, you know, that necessitated to get to do that, that required a increase in the sales tax. And I can tell you, we heard loud and clear from a lot of folks that they preferred not to have the property tax increase because they didn't want their sales tax to go up. And so that plan was abandoned. What we're working on, what I've been working on with two of my colleagues, Senator Boscola and I believe Senator Teplitz, is a senior property tax freeze. So whereas when your taxes go up as a senior citizen under certain conditions, you would not be required to pay that difference. That would be covered by the state. Problem is we need a revenue stream to do that. Some people are looking at gaming, looking at Keno. Other people are looking at other forms of gaming to be able to do that. But we've not been able to arrive at a way to do that. The problem is, you know, school property taxes are expensive, and we tried to do a couple things where we, when we had this property tax discussion, we were looking to do what's called limiting the on the back-end referendum, eliminating the opportunity for school districts to raise property taxes if, in fact, we provided relief. So it's a complicated subject. It's been around for 20, 30-plus years. And in order to make it happen, we have to raise revenue somewhere else to pay for that. And every time we try to go do that and through voter referendums, it's, you know, the voters reject that. So we're going to continue to be able to do that. We're going to continue to support the property tax and rent rebate program, try to grow that program, increase the income limits, and increase the amount that we drive out. But that hasn't been able to happen because we've had – pretty significant structural deficits here in Pennsylvania in terms of revenue.
Barbara, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Swiss Elm Park for Brad. Brad, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, going?
I work in the oil and gas industry, and I'd like to ask you to talk about Act 13 and the severance tax. I feel like I continue working in West Virginia all the time, and don't know that the tax is any cheaper, but I think they actually have something that's known, and the companies know what they're getting into. And in Pennsylvania, it seems like it just can't get figured out.
You're right. Thank you for the call. We have Act 13, as you know, Brad, but others don't, relates to what's called the impact fee for drilling here in Pennsylvania, Marcellus Shale drilling. It generates about $225 million a year that largely goes back to the communities that the drilling takes place, the municipalities and the counties and surrounding counties and other programs. We've had a very significant discussion about enacting a Marcellus Shale tax to bring some certainty and predictability, particularly to the drillers so they know, or the companies, they know what to expect as we go forward. We've not been able to bring closure to that. As we're told, and I agree and believe that the industry at this juncture is really on its back. And the price of gas, I think, in Pennsylvania is about around a dollar or so. And it does, and the number of wells that are being drilled has reduced, is significantly reduced. And we're not doing as much activity as we had in the past. That being said, the governor proposed doing a severance tax that's really been rejected by the legislature primarily. Republicans have said, we're just not going to do it this year. My expectation is that we'll probably do it in next year's budget, next June or so. The question becomes what that level is going to be and what other types of conditions we put there. I believe that the industry is here. It's not going anywhere. We need to be mindful, though, that they need to be mindful that we need to collect revenue from them. At the end of the day, in my view, $225 million for our natural resources is simply not enough. I felt that way when I voted against the proposal, saying it was nowhere near enough, and we need to generate revenue from the Marcellus Shale community. That being said, though, we have to strike the appropriate balance as to make certain that we're not going to do things that will reduce or minimize or depress their ability to make the investments that need to be made here. So while this budget does not contemplate or have any resources coming from the Marcellus Shale community, I can tell you that my strong belief is that we'll likely have some revenue coming from the Marcellus Shale community as part of next year's budget.
Brad, thank you very much for your question. We're going to go to Mary in Forest Hills. Mary, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator, thank you so much for this town hall meeting. I wanted to echo a couple of sentiments that some other folks have said. Again, your knowledge and your willingness to do this without knowing what's coming at you has been really impressive. And also, thank you for letting us know when the question was asked that you have chosen not to accept a salary during this time.
Oh, yeah.
I really commend you for that. I wish others would also follow your lead. And I also wish that we could get back to the point where I think at one point it was mandated that the legislature not receive a salary if there was not a budget in place. So perhaps you can work on that to get the others in the group to be as upstanding as you are. I had heard early on that because of the length of the process, that there was actually talk of putting together a two-year budget so that we wouldn't be in this same set in the same disarray next year. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, we essentially are doing a two-year budget. As we go forward, you know, we are only, you know, 6.5 months away from our next fiscal year. So right now, as we go through our revenue side of the equation in particular, making sure that decisions that we make today, that we factor in a variety of factors. So we are looking at what the impact is going to be for 16-17 on our expenditures. You know, do we know what our cost to carry numbers are going to be, particularly in human services where they're always large, particularly in other areas like corrections, other areas like education? What will our numbers be and where will we be? So we basically put into place on the expenditure side and the revenue side numbers that we believe that we will be dealing with in next year's budget. So the actions that we're going to take the next week or so relative to line items, but also more importantly the revenue side of the equation and revenue projections and where our revenue comes from, while it addresses this year to get us to a balanced budget this year, we are fully cognizant that we have to meet the need for next year as well, so we don't find ourselves in this position again next year. Based upon what is within the framework agreement, I would say to you, we're probably 85 to 90% there with respect to the revenue that we need. I believe that next year, some of the places we might be looking for some additional revenue will likely be in the Marcellus Shale industry, as well as a few other areas. We'll be looking at some revenue options that will help us close out that structural deficit. I got to remind folks that if we don't do things right now, we will likely have anywhere from $1 billion to $1.5 billion structural deficit this year alone. And when you translate that into next year, when you annualize that, it comes roughly between $2.5 to $3 billion. So if we do nothing on the revenue side, and given our cost to carry or our cost drivers, based on what we spend now and where we would go, we would probably be faced with a $2.5 to $3 billion hole in our budget that would mean that we'd have to go and make pretty significant cuts. And the places that we typically go to make cuts, as we did four and a half years ago, is in education and in human service programs, in the health human service department. And that's where the draconian cuts take place. And those are the places that they have the most impact on people in Pennsylvania. That's why our scores with our kids, when we disinvest in education, our scores go down. When we invest in our kids, our scores go up. When we disinvest in economic development programs, our job creations numbers go down. And we go from 7 to 48. So our view is, and what this budget does, Democrats and Republicans agreeing that what we need to do is not manage decline any further, but take an effort to begin to reinvest and rebuild in Pennsylvania. So I think that at the end of the day, that's where we're going to end up at as we go forward, and it's likely going to be premised on a two-year budget.
Mary, thank you very much for your question. We're going to go to Joni. Joni, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Joni in Park Place.
Hi, Joni. How are you doing today there? You and John doing all right?
Yeah. I want to thank you. I also want to thank you for holding this meeting. I think it's really important, and I'm really great to hear all the people commenting. Earlier in the discussion, you had a conversation about redistricting, and I want
federal redistricting.
Yeah, the federal redistricting, right.
Right.
But, oh, that's not, yeah. There's a piece of legislation in the Senate. Oh, that was just federal, right? You know,
yeah.
So you have signed on to the bill that's in the House for the state redistricting, yes?
I can't sign on to House bills, Joni, but I'll take a look at it. I think there are a number of bills that have been introduced the last several years on reconstituting how we do our state Senate and state House, our state legislative redistricting, quite different from the legislative process to the federal seats. But as you know, Joni, I've been knee-deep in this redistricting conversation and went to the Supreme Court, and we were successful with some other folks. And we got to prevent what took place, you know, along those lines. But, you know, I'm not sure whether or not – my guess is that our Republican colleagues, particularly in light of the Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court elections, my guess is my colleagues are likely to go to court – or, excuse me, try to do some legislative changes to reconstitute the Legislative Reapportionment Commission.
Joni, thank you very much for your call, Senator. We're going to go back to Patty in Verona. Patty, go ahead, Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator. How are you doing tonight?
I'm well, Patty. How are you doing tonight?
I'm very good, sir. Just real quick, I just want to say that I totally respect you for doing these open phone forums to be able to answer these questions, you know, in a split second. And I just want also like to say that I think you're doing a fantastic job. And
well, thank you very much.
I totally respect you and appreciate you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Patty. How's everything in Verona for you guys, okay?
Very good, sir. Very good. So far,
great.
So good. But
thank
again,
you very, very much.
Thank you.
Senator, we're going to go back to the callers now. We're going to go to Faye in Penn Hill. She's been waiting a while. Faye, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, thank you. I also echo your courage to you know, have an open forum like this, and I've appreciated the comments, both yours and of the callers. I'm calling to express two concerns. One of them is in regards to the Penn Hill School District and also for the seniors, especially that are living in this community, like that one lady, I can't remember her name, who's been paying, you know, school taxes for 50 years. And I recently read in the paper that there is going to be an approval to increase the millage once again for Penn Hills above whatever the state limit is. And, you know, I just am, I'm without even words to speak to that, how unjust that is. And I wonder, with the billions and billions of dollars that go into the coffers, especially related to gambling revenues, why there cannot be a relief, especially for seniors, when it comes to school and real estate taxes. That's one question. I don't know if you want to answer that one first, and
yeah,
then I'll
Faye,
go to the second.
Well, very quickly on the first question, if you're asking me, gaming money does make its way to seniors and makes its way to every single homeowner in Pennsylvania. A couple hundred
but
bucks.
But not enough.
I don't disagree.
But not,
yeah, but we have the highest gaming tax in the country. No other state taxes as much as we tax the gaming industry. And it is what it is. And we generate about $700 million a year in taxes from the gaming industry, which we turn around and put into not only the senior program or the homeowner property tax program, but also we've enhanced the benefits for folks who participate in the property tax and rent rebate program. And that's been significant as well. I know we have more to do. With respect to
what rebate program are you talking about for seniors to get relief from school taxes or, you know, or the real estate taxes. Well, real estate taxes, I'm aware of at the county level, they do get a reduction there.
Right, you get the homestead exemption at the county level, but there's also a property tax and rent rebate program we have in Pennsylvania. And if you call my office, we'll be able to work with you. But there are income limits. You got to be, I think, over 60 to be able to enjoy it. And it depends upon your income level, determines how much you can get. I think it goes anywhere from 850 down to 250. But again, it's income driven. And they don't, in fact, when they calculate the income, they don't look at your Social Security income. When they take half of your Social Security income combined with your retirement income. So if you call my office at 412-241-6690 or any of my district offices, they will work with you, Faye, to tell you how and see whether or not you're eligible or not. And they would help you do the application to do that. You can do it at our office or we can work with you on the phone to be able to do that.
Okay. And this is in regard to the school taxes?
It would be not specific to school taxes. The gaming money goes specifically to the school taxes. So if you look at your school tax bill, there would be a reduction on your tax bill of your home that the gaming money covers for you. So that causes your number to be reduced. The property tax and rent rebate program is not specific to to your school, your local, or your county taxes. It's just a check that's sent back to you to help offset your property taxes.
Well, and I will follow through on what you're saying, but I'm just, you know, expressing to you, because I've checked this in the last couple of years, and to my understanding, for the school taxes, that there is no consideration that is given to people, you know, whether you're, I think if you're 65, maybe it comes at 65 or 66 for a senior, but, you know, that is, you know, one issue unto itself. The other one is in regards to what's happening in Penn Hills, you know, with this school district and the debt and the complete mismanagement of resources and how it is affecting this community. I mean, people will move out of here in droves.
I totally understand the concern given the financial crisis and situation that the school district had to deal with over the course of the past year. Worked very closely with them, helping them to be able to negotiate and manage a fair loan initially and then the bond issue they have to do. We are working with them to help them at the state. We worked hard with the Department of Public Education to advance dollars to them to help them make payments, so to speak. And I can tell you there were a couple frantic calls that to make sure that happened. Going forward, you know, as I understand it, there was an issue of some, I don't want to call it mismanagement. There were some concerns, though, that things were not managed properly, and that allowed the district to get into the dilemma that they were in. But I will say to you that, you know, we're working to try to get out of that dilemma and try to get to a place where the taxes would then become more reasonable as we go forward. One of the things that we're able to do through this budget, we are going to send more resources to Penn Hills through the general appropriation bill. The education line is going to be increased by a significant amount. I think Penn Hills, as I look at it, is likely to receive a $1.8 million increase in funding from the Commonwealth for education, special ed, and early learning programs. So the 1.8 increase would certainly help them manage their budget as they go forward through this process.
Thank you very much, Faye, for your comments. Senator, we're coming down the stretch here. I know we're coming at the end. I know you have some concluding comments for the folks that have joined us.
Oh, yeah. At the end of the day, I want to say thank you for the folks, and I appreciate the kind comments. And I also thought, you know, given that we're working on some pretty important stuff up here that here in Harrisburg, that it's timely information. I know folks are reading a lot about what we're doing. Back in the district, they're reading about a lot of what we're doing. So I appreciate the chance to communicate with folks. We will continue to do it. I think it's an effective way to reach out to our constituents, and we're going to continue to do these telephone town halls and into the new year, as well as having some town hall meetings in our communities. I think they're also very effective to, you know, see folks face-to-face and address issues and concerns that are there. So I want to say thank you to everyone. I would like to wish everyone a happy holiday season as we go forward, and and look forward when we're back in the district, probably next week sometime. Look forward to seeing everyone there. So thank you all for participating.
And again, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on the voicemail for Senator Costa. Senator Costa or his office will get back to you. It's been great having you here again. If you have to reach Senator Costa at any point, the phone number at his district office is 412-241-6690, or you can visit his website at www.senatorcosta.com. Again, that's www.senatorcosta.com. It's been a great evening. We had great phone calls. I appreciate your participation.